talking to Leo Cleveland Muscles Shoals, S-H-O-A-L-S, who played in the Carolina League in 1949 when I saw him play a lot of other places. We're going to talk about that. But you just don't even have to pay attention to that at all or whatever. But you're going to talk baseball. Well, I wonder how you started. When did you start playing?
Well, I started in 37. In Portsmouth High, tryout camp there. A fella took me up there. In fact, Dick Hobbitzel, an umpire in a league I was playing in, a semi-pro league, I got a job, quit high school, and got this job, to need a little money during the Depression. And there was a Brooklyn fella came in there, and he wanted to take me to Dayton, Ohio. This guy had broken a leg up there. So Dick told me, he said, lay off of that guy. I said, that's Brooklyn. He said, that's lousy. He said, they're a lousy organization. He said, I'll get you out.
Thank you, man.
And he... in fact, this Brooklyn guy, scout, went up to my house, talked to my people, and I listened to Dick.
Well,
Dick...
Now, where was this? Where
this was in Parkersburg, West Virginia.
Okay, right.
This was after I got quit high school. So I didn't talk much to this Brooklyn fellow. And Dick, during the winter, he never contacted me. But there was an old lumberman contacted me that was in the lumber business, that his hobby was getting ball players out. So he contacted me, and he asked me if I would go to Portsmouth High with him, St. Louis Cardinal training camp, and all expenses paid, and I agreed. So he came by, picked me up, had a large contingent of ball players with big numbers on their back, and I had my big red uniform, red cap, and red socks on, And right away, they had guys there, they see I'm 5'10 and a half, They had big 6'6" first basemen there. And then every now and then they'd give me a first base. Well, that big guy jumping. Finally, I said, wait a minute. I'm here too, So the next time they need the first base, and I jumped out there. So I that way I got in the inter squad games, Well, it happened I got lashing that ball pretty good.
How old were you then?
I was 20. So 16, I guess about 20, 19, 20. And I was lashing that ball pretty good. Well, those people were behind this screen there. They were at death. And those scouts, and Ricky wasn't there, but Pop Gelsmer, Joe Sugden, and Heine Mueller, and some of those fellas. You may know some of those guys.
I do know some of those guys.
And they took me out of that ball game and took me down the left field foul line. And they wanted me to sprint. They wanted, and I think they wanted to see whether I could run. They wanted me to play the outfield. I thought, well, you swing a pretty good bat. We'll make an outfielder out of this boy. So I would sprint, and then I'd walk back, and then they'd have me to run hard. And one of them asked me, said, did you ever have a broken leg or a broken ankle? And he said, you're favoring one leg there. And the time must not have been so good, But anyway, we came back up, and I went back in the ball game. And they eventually then come to the conclusion that I was a first baseman again. So then I was signed into Monessen in the Penn State League, Monessen, Pennsylvania. There was... I'm trying to think of this. I didn't think I'd ever forget him. General manager at Rochester for years, and they'd sent him there. Well, anyway,
what class were they? Were they Class D?
That was D, yeah. Uh-huh. So they signed. He wanted to sign me for $75 a month, and I said, no, I can't hold on that. So he said, we're going to give you $100, but don't say anything to these other guys. Well, I had a friend, Mike Urocco, a big pitcher. Right away, I told Mike, I said, it's a cheap bunch of guys. I said, Well, I said, they'll hit you with 75, and then they'll come back with a little more. So he did, and Mike, he did the same thing to Mike, and Mike said no, and he said, we'll give you 100, don't you say anything about it. Andy French, that's his guy's name.
Oh, yeah.
You may know Andy.
Yes, sir, I sure do.
So, well, anyway, we went to Monessen, and I had a real good year. I hit 366, and I had 100 ball games is what I played in. And I remember Branch Rickey then in the next year at trying to get me to go to New Iberia. When we went up in the office and he made the arrangements on the salary, I didn't want to go. You know, I was balking, and he gave me a $50 raise and talked to this Gennaro down in New Iberia. And he told me that he said, my son, you had over 50% of your base hits for extra base hits. You know, I had doubles and triples and home runs. And he said, over 50%. So he told me, he said, something that actually a boy in my circumstances just couldn't hardly refuse, you know. He said, hell, it's only a jump over to Houston. And he said, don't you worry about it. He said, it's just a jump to Houston. He said, then you can't tell what takes place when you hit Houston. He said, you've got the spring coming, and you can't tell what. So, then I had a fateful thing to happen to me. Well, anyway, I took him up on. I went down there, and I had this fist fight with this Harrison Wickle. He called me. He said, I was on second base. I'd only been there 10 days, and I wasn't hitting the ball good anyway. And, you know, that's another thing. I think maybe I was hitting 250 or something like that. And hitting under the ball and everything else. And I was on second base, and there's a lot of gamblers there. Oh, those French people gamble. They hold up that money and leave it. And they were giving Wickle a hard time coaching third base. He was losing, you know? And they were giving him a hard time. Well, I was on second base. So he motioned, this guy hit a line drive to left. He misjudged the line drive. I rounded third, and he's motioned me home, but back, back, back. Well, I fell back, and that ball was hit so hard that he shot it right in there, and he tagged me out. Well, he bent over me, sort of putting the monkey on my back. He looked down at me and said, you dumb son of a bitch, where did you play ball? Right down there.
Oh.
Right out big and loud, and the stands weren't any farther than from here to there, 10 feet away. Well, that made them, you know, yeah, that is a dumb ball player, you know. Well, I jumped up, and back in those days, I was pretty high strung. And I jumped up, and I chested him back about 3 or 4 feet, and I said, okay, I'll see you after the game. Well, I did. We got into it. And they sent him to Daytona Beach. They sent me to Albuquerque. Well, I was disgusted. I was ready to hang it up. They gave me I can't recall whether it was in Gennaro's office, but where they paid me off. And in fact, I had the season had already opened when I got there, and I had a little bit more money coming than I had played for. So they gave me the paycheck and a bus ticket about that long, about 3 feet long, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Bill DeLancey, manager.
Yeah.
Do you remember Bill?
Bill DeLancey from Greensboro, North Carolina.
That's right.
Where I work right now.
He had tuberculosis,
right.
And Ricky sent him out there.
That's right.
And a fine man. So anyway, I was so disgusted, I was ready to give it up. So I took the bus ticket and went to the bus station. I asked the ticket man, I'd like to get the money on this ticket. I'd like to cash it in and get the cash. I'm going home. He said, buddy, it'd take 3 months to get cash on. I said, that's got to go through Baltimore. I said, oh, my God. Well, anyway, I couldn't turn that into cash, so I hung around there that day. And I was rooming with this American League umpire, about 60. He's a right-handed pitcher. I talked to him on the telephone here not too long ago. We was getting data for that. All right. We're in New York in a playhouse. I've got the letter over there. Slugger.
No.
Yeah, they had it. Then he said it was a provocative success in our lobby of our theater, and thanked me.
That's fantastic.
What do you think?
Where was that? What uniform was it?
That's Kingsport.
Uh-huh.
Cherokee.
Yeah.
That's actually one of the very few good pictures, and that was taken by a Life magazine freelance photographer. They were running a story out of Kingsport, minor league, and Life didn't take it. General Boaters magazine wrote it up, and they didn't take this, but he had all kinds of pictures, and that was one of them.
Easy to see why they call you Muscles. But tell me,
now you shrink down as you get older.
You're telling me. But get back to Albuquerque. You're trying to leave Albuquerque, and they won't cash in your bus.
I'm trying to go to Albuquerque. I'm trying to leave New Iberia.
Oh, leave New Iberia. Go home. Yeah,
I'm trying to leave New Iberia. And so I laid around there, and finally I said, well, I might as well get on that bus. So I got on the bus, and got to Dallas, and I stopped off there, and I stayed around there till that money run out. I stayed around there for a week. I run into a bunch of college boys up at one of those places. And we crashed a hotel, we crashed a party or two. And, you know, we'd get in there and they'd welcome us, though. We'd have a big time, you know. And finally, it was on a, seemed to me like it was on a Sunday. I was broke, and
I'll bet you were.
I think I looked in that pocket. I had that bus ticket though, and I went down there, and you could get hot tamales, two for a nickel. I had a quarter, so I got five of these. See, two for a nickel, I got 15 or 20 cents worth of those. And ate those and stepped in a place there and got a cup of coffee. Then I got on that bus. But I had a long day, that night, next morning at 8 o'clock, before I got into the Court Cafe in Albuquerque. And so I got to Amarillo. And I said, well, this is not going to work. I got to find out something here. So I thought of that Salvation Army. I said, well, I don't like this. Buddy, give me a dime, you know. And I was dressed up, you know. I was neat. So I went up the police station, asked them where the Salvation Army was, and they said, get two blocks down, up those big stairs. I went up there and I explained, gave the story to this fella. He said, no meals, buddy, but back there's 100 cots. Threw me out a stack of Bull Durham. And I said, no, thank y'all. I've always wondered about this organization. I said, looks like I'm sort of misread on this deal. I said, thanks anyway. I started down the stairs. He said, hey, Mac, come back here. She come back. He said, I believe you're on the level. He threw me out a card. And he said, you go down there two blocks down back to the restaurant. I went down there, and I'll never forget. I sat down at this table. This girl, no menu, they brought it. It was a plate with a piece of meatloaf about so thick, a couple of sweet potatoes with gravy on it, and a little leaf or two of lettuce with a couple of slices of tomato, and large cups of coffee, and big thick slices of bread with heavy butter on it, and a little small dish of some sort of custard or pudding of some sort. And I really devoured that in a hurry, and this old girl noticed that, and she kept watching, you know, and Finally, she came over and she said, "Would you like some more coffee and bread and butter?" I said, "Yeah, bring it on." So she brought the big thick bread and butter, in which it filled up pretty good, but still, and a boy like me and needs a lot of food, you know. So I went up to the bus. I had quite a wait there until my bus left out, and I said to myself, I said, "There's ways of conquering situations like this. Maybe use a little psychology." And I sat down with an old Texan, big hat. I sat down with this guy, and we started a conversation. "Where are you headed?" He's White Oak, Oklahoma, and I'm Albuquerque. And he says, I said, "Well, it's pretty hard, though, on a trip like that, and especially on an empty stomach." I said, "I've got a long trip, but I ran out of funds." He said, "You mean you've got to..." He said, it's only 6. You won't get in there till 8:30 tomorrow morning. And you run out of funds this morning?" I said, "Yeah, but I'll make it some way." He said, "Hell, boy, come on." And across that street we went. And the first thing he said, we went in this cafe. First thing he said, "You drink beer, boy?" They had those big mugs. And boy, that hit the spot. So... he said, "Order a steak and order a big..." Back then, steaks were bigger than they are now.
Oh, yeah.
They were great, big, thick, juicy steaks. Well, I ate that big steak with everything that went with it. And this old boy was awful good man. And we went back to the bus station, I think, after another mug of that beer on top of that big meal. And he wished me well, and we then got on our way. And I bedded down like a big bear in that bus. 8:30 in the morning, I pulled in Albuquerque. And I had to go to this court cafe and see this official from the ball club. And I dropped in, and as early as it was, there wasn't many people in there. And he was up in this mezzanine overlooking the restaurant. And he just suspicioned that I was a ball player. And he yelled down and said, "Are you Shoals?" And I said, "That's right." He said, "Where you been?" I said, "Well, I knew that there had to be a story. I had to tell something because here I was late there a week, you know. And I had to tell him something." So I said, "Well, it's a long story. I'll tell you." He said, "Well, you haven't had your breakfast." I said, "No, I haven't." He said, "Well, order up." Well, I ordered up that country ham and steak and signed a check there, you know. Well, anyway, I got in touch with him, and he said, "If I were you..." The ball club just got off the road and they in a losing frame of mind, and he said, "I believe I'd wait till this evening before I'd lost my bus ticket." See, and I had to hitchhike across the bigger part of the trip. I forget from where it was, but I'd lost that bus ticket. Well, you know that that they went for that. There's no publicity on it about why this boy is late or anything, but they went for it up until the end of that season. And Bill DeLancey said to me when the season ended, he said, "Muscles, watch that ticket. Don't lose that ticket." And all that time, that son of a gun kept that hidden from me.
So you spent the whole season there. What year was that?
That's 1938.
Uh-huh. Mm. How'd you do there?
I did pretty good. I did pretty good. We had Bobby Sturgeon play shortstop for Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Stan Hoff, an outfielder. See on that ball club.
What class was
that?
Albuquerque was
C, I believe.
What league was that? Was that the
Texas Arizona League?
Uh-huh.
Texas Arizona League. I believe it was C ball. And that was 1938. So I don't know whether Bill he and I got along good, because when we'd come across that desert going to El Paso on that, we had a nice big bus. In fact, the guy that owned the ball club was a millionaire, Sam Menses. And we had a new big bus. And we'd stop at a little hamburger, hot dog joint, chili joint, and you always have a beer joint. Well, Bill and I'd slip off. And I was the only one, I guess, that ever slipped off with him to get a mug of beer. And Bill and I hit it pretty good. He was a left-hand hitter, and he had that TB. He had a wife and two little girls. He owned a chicken ranch in Phoenix. And I don't know whether Bill, then in 39, I don't know whether he told on me or not, you know, like that. But that didn't help. Well, there's a few of those factors that you know what I mean? Then when it got up into 39, 40, well, you knew about when I got shot.
No.
Oh.
No, I didn't know about that.
Well, see, in 39, that's what she didn't want me to tell you. I was in a nightclub, and this guy, we came back from the nightclub, two couples. And we stopped at this in Johnson City. See, I was playing in Johnson City. It might have been why I believe that Bill and them told on me. And in that fight that I had, nobody would take me because Ricky had a meeting with Heine Mueller, told Ollie Vanek this. Mm-hmm. And he told him, he said, now, a lot of you guys probably wanting this show, Asheville, B-ball, A-ball, and Columbus, A-ball. But he said, I want to tell you now that whoever takes you better handle him or your job's in jeopardy. Hmm. So nobody took me. But Ollie Vanek took me, brought me back to Johnson City. D, see? He brought me back here. And I done him a dirty trick. I'm hitting 365. I played enough games that I won it before this happened, right at the end of the season. I hit 365. And 21 home runs. We 100, maybe 90 games or 100 games.
Uh-huh.
Well, anyway, camp. It was Broadway camps. We stopped there. Well, in the meantime, I had bought a pint of Crab Orchard from the country kitchen, the nightclub. And I had it in my jacket. And I hung my jacket on the booth. And this Rex and I was up there playing a little machine you put nickels in.
Mm-hmm.
And the racehorse machine dropped. The girls were sitting in the booth. And I stepped back, got my little pint up and raised up and turned the cap, and this guy saw it. And he just come back and reached back and jerked out of my hand. And I said, hell, that's mine. And there he went with it. And me right after him, and he jerked out a 38. Poof, and he hit me right here.
Great day in the morning.
Hit me right there, and it came out right there. And I was in that position. If I hadn't have been, it would have. And it went through my liver.
Hmm.
And I went right on through and on out with him. And this one again shot me again. And they loaded me up and took me to hospital. And operated, and they even said I had a 50-50 chance to live.
Boy. Hmm.
And I laid and listened to the radio blare. We have another report on show, still 50-50. And hell, I was raised up in bed. And that old doctor came in there and he says, it all depends on you if you want to live. And those people are good to me. They sent me flowers, my God. In the meantime, a picture was in the paper. There was a rosary and a girl had given me in Kansas City, an Indian girl.
Uh-huh.
And it had a rosary. And that was showing real plain in the paper. Had it on uniform. When I woke up, the Catholics had me surrounded, Catholic priests. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Good.
They're good people.
Take care of you. You betcha.
And of course, they soon found out I wasn't that. But anyway, I came out of it, and I didn't know what the
Oh, yeah. My goodness.
Huh. See, I didn't know whether whether I'd ever be able to play ball again.
Right there where it came out? Yeah, uh-huh.
Well, you
yeah.
know what? I went, the doctor that did the operating, not too long ago, I visit the Veterans Hospital on occasions for a minor thing. And I wanted to get his x-rays or his input on that operation back in 1939. So I went and found this doctor in Johnson City. And I got the x-rays and it says clean wound, healed wonderfully. In other words, it says a clean 38 caliber bullet wound, healed wonderfully.
Oh, you were lucky.
Yeah,
you
lucky.
Were lucky.
Of course, you know your liver regenerates yeah. and heals real good, you know. So
that was in 39. Where'd you go in 40? Did you play ball in it?
Yeah, in 1940, the Cardinals got rid of me. Then the Cardinals, they sold me to Bobby Goff in the East Texas League. Bobby was independent. You've heard of Bobby Goff.
Mm-hmm, I sure
have. So Bobby had me out there, and then, you know, this war coming on and everything, you know. So I had a pretty good year at Tyler, and so they traded me then. They right up to the end of the season there, they traded me over to El Dorado, the Cotton States League.
Uh-huh.
Guy Sturdy, understudy to Sizzler.
Yep.
Oh, wonderful man. Left-handed first baseman. old guy, he used to tell me, he said, I drank the liquor and Sizzler played the ball. He said, I was too good of a daggone first baseman from the trade. He said, I was always ready. And that's one thing about him. He'd never allow a ball player to come out there loaded, drunk. But as long as he was, in fact, he would toss you his key to his locker. Like on a Sunday morning, or Sunday afternoon, he'd toss you the key and say, hell, straighten up, you know. But he had a Wally Cop. He had an old catcher that was his coach. And Wally would run the guy. If he thought the guy was loaded, run you around the park and then bring you up and stand you in front of old guy. Oh, he was a case, boy. And that was then. But I made myself a home there. I rode all the way across Texas over there to Hot Springs, Arkansas. They were on the road. I went up and I suited. They was already at the ballpark, ready to play. Hurriedly out to the ballpark, and they stuck me in there. And I hit one out the first time. And they broadcast those games back at El Dorado,
yeah.
Play-by-play. And I had I might have hit two out, but I know I made, I remember they said, boy, you made a home for yourself. And I had a pretty good year there in El Dorado. So Guy got fired. He got fired at El Dorado. He took the Marshall Ball Club in the same league. I know why they fired him. He had a club there, a men's club, and he had roomed off. And he had a bar, and them married men, and these married women raising the devil, you know. There was girls going up there and things. Well, old guy, that was a pretty rich town, El Dorado, you know. Oil.
Yeah.
So they got rid of guy. Well, do you know when they got rid of that booger? He traded for me. Now, he traded five ball players. Now, this war is coming on. I only have one thing I have to regret that year. That I didn't get to go and play for Roger Hornsby. Mm-hmm. Roger wanted me at Oklahoma City. And it didn't work out. He sent Red Boris in there to look the situation over. And he came in at the wrong time. And he went back and said, he's happy where he's at. And Roger was kind of a guy that didn't believe in it. He was a gambler, but he didn't believe in the drinking.
Yeah.
He didn't believe in the party, but he gambled. Like Sturdy was the biggest gambler you ever saw. He used to take me in Vicksburg, Mississippi, down on at the end of Pier Street, and we'd get on a gambling boat out in Mississippi. He'd take me with him, and a motorboat would take you out there, and then Big Bruiser would pull you up, and he'd shoot crap, and I'd cater the girl at the bar. And that was some time there, I swear.
Hang on.